Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, August 29th, 2022, live, our last show in August, to be rebroadcast Wednesday, August 31st, 2022, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Hey.
We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, we had a cool weekend, didn't we?
We did have a cool weekend. Yeah. That was fun.
We did RhymeCon.
We did RhymeCon.
Yes. I mean, yes, we did not run RhymeCon.
No.
We rode our bikes at RhymeCon.
We were mobile support.
Yes, we were mobile support for RhymeCon. It was fun. And I was on leg 8 from Needles Eye Road in Pomfret to Pomfret Town Hall, which means I got to pass Pomfret Station and Covell Road and Lewis Road, I think, right?
I don't know. Something like that.
A couple of roads.
Something like that.
And
I had some nice cohorts.
There was a nice woman named Valerie, who is a teacher locally. Who was at one of the crossings, and another woman named Chris, who is actually my friend Dave's daughter's mother-in-law. So Stacy's mother-in-law was working support. She was sitting at one of the crossings. So I got to meet her, and that was kind of cool. And we saw all these people. What a valiant effort. So what RhymeCon is Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut. RhymeCon. And it's a relay, like Ragnar. I don't know what Ragnar stands for. Mm. Somebody had a Ragnar hat.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a relay, and they have teams. And so it's 3 states, 18 legs, 95 miles. Yeah, so
it's a long running race.
So what they do, so the teams have 6 people on them.
Or three.
Yes, 6 or 3.
Yeah.
So the 3 would be ultra. So that if you have 6 people on your team, each person runs 3 legs, right? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have 3 people on your team, each person runs 6 legs. Ugh. So that's what's half of 95?
Well, it comes out to be roughly, this is very rough, but if you're on a 6-person team, you're going to run about 15 miles.
Oh, okay.
And if you're on a 3-person team, you're going to run about a marathon. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's broken up unless you choose to do it all at once.
Right.
You know, it all really depends on what you choose to do.
Where are you?
But the smart way to do it is to break it up because, you know, running a marathon can be, you know,
really hard on you.
Really hard. Well, not to mention it could turn into I crapped out at like mile 18.
Yes.
And now my team depends on me and I'm not able
to
pull it off. So you're better to break it into threes.
Yeah.
And if you do, you know, 3 8-mile legs or whatever.
So it started at 4 in the morning in Lincoln, Rhode Island. And it followed, it mostly followed the course of the East Coast Greenway from Lincoln, Rhode Island. Went through the Douglas State Forest, which is where you were stationed, right?
Yep.
That must have been lovely.
It's beautiful up there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. It's, you know, packed stone dust trails. Very nice.
Oh, how nice.
There was some trap rock because I got a flat tire on the trap rock because I didn't inflate my tires enough. But my lesson learned.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in the next show.
Okay. And I had trap rock too, but I only had about a quarter of a mile of trap rock because the section from Needles Eye to Pomfret Station isn't entirely improved yet. Then from Pomfret Station to Town Hall, it's great. It was lovely stone dust. So I only had about like a quarter mile of the trap rock, but I got very nervous in the beginning of it because I was like, I have a hard time navigating this. And if it's all like this, I'm not going to be effective because I'm tentative on this stuff. But thank goodness it was only a quarter of a mile. And then there was a tree down and we needed somebody with a saw, but we didn't have one. but that's okay. Anyway, so it was a good time. It's a good time to see all those runners and see the varying people who are running and walking really slow and people who were over their heads and people who were running faster than I could. I had a guy pass me on my bike that I could not catch.
Really?
Yes. He was a young fella and he was very slender and not very big. And yeah, he passed me on my bike. I mean, I wasn't riding super fast, but yeah. Uh-huh. That happened. So that's amazing when you see stuff like that. So that was fun. And then yesterday I went and rode with my friends at the shoreline and Ron didn't come because he doesn't care about the ocean as much as I do. And we really had a wonderful ride. I mean, Ron was very concerned about there being lots of traffic, but the route that we took did not have lots of traffic and a lot of the ride was not directly on the shoreline. But the roads that we used, it wasn't terrible. It really wasn't. And we, you know, we really enjoyed it. There's this great road in Killingworth called Roast Meat Hill Road that everybody knows about. And if you start on the, I think it comes off of 148. I'm not sure. It comes off of a state highway. And if you go from that state highway, it's a gradual descent and it's wonderful. It's a very pretty road. So it is residential with lots of trees and very rural residential. It's very, very lovely. So I had a really nice time with my friends. And after that, I got to go to the beach and that was nice. And the temperature was just perfect. People were in the water at Rocky Neck State Park because it was warm enough to be in the water and it wasn't over oppressively hot out. It was just a gorgeous day yesterday. It was so nice. So and you know, we're running out of days like that this year. I mean, it's going to start getting cooler and, you know, it'll be a nice fall. It's just that, you know, we're not going to have these warm days where you want to go swimming. So anyway, all right. So I'm going to talk about some stuff this week. I'm finally going to get around to talking about, your gallbladder and your liver, and talk about, gallbladder pain relief. So that's the first thing I'm going to go to. So I wanted to talk about, because sometimes people have gallstones and they hurt and they're not ready to have them out. You know, if you get an acutely inflamed gallbladder, then the thing that's going to happen is you're going to have, a cholecystectomy, chole referring to the gallbladder, cholecyst. So a cholecyst is basically a cyst, a cyst in your body. When your body makes a cyst, we usually think of a cyst as something that's pathological. But in Greek, a cyst is just something that is hollow inside. So the gallbladder is referred to as a sort of cyst in your body, and so is your bladder. Because when you have cystitis, that's a urinary tract infection. And when you have cholecystitis, it's the cyst that holds the bile. That's the chole, right? That cyst that holds the bile. So the gallbladder's job is to be a storehouse for bile. I've had patients say to me, doesn't the gallbladder, what do you do without a gallbladder? How do you make bile? I said, you make bile with your liver. You don't make bile with your gallbladder. You can live without a gallbladder. It's not ideal, but you can do it. It's like a storage facility. And that's what I tell people. It's like being on the New Jersey Turnpike where you have those storehouses for all the oil. Those are tanks. You don't make the oil there. You just store it there and then you take it out when you need it. Well, that's what your body does with the gallbladder. Your gallbladder has bile ducts that are attached to the liver and then your liver makes bile, which it stores in the gallbladder, and then your gallbladder secretes bile as you need it for food. And bile is there to emulsify fats. It's there to carry out toxins. It's there to carry fat soluble vitamins. So bile has a number of functions. If you don't have enough bile, you're going to tend to be constipated. So bile will also be part of the composition of your stool. It's part of what colors your stool, and it's part of what makes your stool easy to pass. If your stool is low in bile, you will be more constipated. And this is something I see in people who, for whatever reason, they don't make enough bile. For example, women who are peri and postmenopausal, estrogen helps you to produce bile. So if you are lower in estrogen, you might not make as much bile. And if you're taking an estrogen blocker, say because you've had breast cancer or ovarian cancer, so if you're taking tamoxifen or Arimidex or another drug that blocks estrogen, your anastrozoles and your letrozoles and those azoles, right? They Azoles. Can, yes, they end in azole. Although there are azoles that have nothing to do with estrogen blocking, like pantoprazole is a proton pump inhibitor for your reflux. But anyway, anastrozole and letrozole are estrogen blockers, and estrogen blockers can reduce your bile. So I will sometimes give, so when I determine that somebody has a bile-mediated constipation, I'll give them ox bile. In fact, if I'm trying a lot of things to help somebody with their constipation, ox bile is one of the things that we'll use. You can get extracted ox bile and give it in pills, and people take it, and sometimes it works. So anyway, so your poor gallbladder, can get taxed if you eat too much poor quality fat. If you're not running bile well through your gallbladder, then you're going to be more likely to get gallstones. And so gallstones are made of cholesterol, bile salts, and calcium. And they will block up your gallbladder. And you can get sludge in your gallbladder, and you can get actual full-size stones. And if you have stones, they will block up your gallbladder, and they'll make it so that your gallbladder can't do its job. And the gallbladder may be inflamed to start with and then produce stones, or the gallbladder may have stones, which make it so that when the gallbladder contracts and tries to squeeze out the bile that it's trying to send to your, you know, to your bile ducts and then into your digestive system for food processing, it contracts around those gallstones, and guess what? Ow! And where you feel gallbladder pain is in the right upper quadrant of your abdomen. If you're on Facebook, you can see I'm pointing right here in the right upper quadrant of my abdomen right here. And you may also feel it in the back in your right shoulder blade. And the reason you feel it in your right shoulder blade is because the pain is referred. The gallbladder, the nerves of the gallbladder are hooked up to your spinal level at about, I would say, that's probably T6, T7. And so you're going to have referred pain to that spinal level. So you're going to feel some of that pain in your back. It's not that there's not something. What you're feeling is a contraction of the muscles that are attached to the spinal nerves that come out of T6, T7, because there are spinal nerves that are also attached to the gallbladder. So that's why that happens. And so that's one of the confirmatories for gallbladder pain, that you have pain in your right upper back over your right shoulder blade. So how can you ease this pain? Of course, you have to get monitored. And the way you would get diagnosed with gallstones is you would have had this ongoing right upper quadrant pain, and you would have an ultrasound ordered by your physician. You could see gallstones on an ultrasound. You can also see gallstones on a CT scan. I had a CT scan almost 3 years ago when I had my kidney stone, and I was very pleased because my whole abdomen was absolutely normal, except I had a small non-obstructing kidney stone that was visible. I had already passed the obstructing one, and that was no fun. But I had a clear gallbladder, which was very exciting. So you want to keep your gallbladder clear by not eating too much sugar, not eating too much poor quality fat, not eating too much fast food, junk food, deep fried stuff, and making sure that you're regular. If you have regular normal bowel movements, that means the whole biliary tree, all of the bile and all of your pipes get cleaned out. If you eat a lot of fiber, if you eat spicy vegetables in the mustard family, you're going to keep your biliary system running. If you eat a lot of fiber, if you just have regular healthy bowel movements, your biliary system is going to tend to stay clear. If you have a family history of gallstones, that can be a problem too. So I said that gallstones are generally made of calcium, cholesterol, and bile salts. And those are sort of the lifestyle gallstones. There are gallstones that people make when they have other biliary issues that are going to be made of bilirubin. And that's usually when somebody has a genetic component where their biliary system doesn't quite work right. When you have gallstone pain, you can have nausea, vomiting, fever, diarrhea. You can even have dark urine. And the reason you would have dark urine is because your biliary system is blocked up, and you're winding up, it's backing up into your bloodstream, and bile is backing up into your blood. And so it's being excreted through your kidneys, and you'll see it in your urine. So that's not a good sign when that happens. And so if you have gallstones, doctors, so we're talking about, you're at a point where you have gallstones, they hurt, and your doctor hasn't said to you, okay, it's time for your gallbladder to come out. So we're going to see if we can treat you to a point where maybe we can maintain you without you having to have major surgery. And, you know, when you have your gallbladder out, it is major surgery. It's abdominal surgery. Generally, if there's no complications, they can do it laparoscopically. And by laparoscopically, that means they make a tiny incision around your belly button, and they might make another incision in the side of your body. One of the incisions is to go in and actually have a scope where you look around and you can find the gallbladder and retrieve it. And the other incision is to blow you up with air. And so they blow you up with air so they can open up because your abdominal cavity, when you see anatomical pictures of what the inside of the abdomen looks like, you see all these organs and they're very nicely arranged. So you can see all the different organs. Here's your liver, here's your pancreas, here's your gallbladder, here's your intestines, here's your large intestine. And it all looks very nice. If you were to actually open somebody up, it sounds kind of weird, but if you actually open somebody up and look at what they look at like inside, like if you looked at me inside right now, it's all mushed together. Doesn't look like that. And not only that, when you see a nice anatomical picture in a book, they paint the organs different colors so it's easy to see and recognize the different organs. So, you know, the liver will be this lovely dark brown and the pancreas might be this shade of yellow and the colon will be a shade of burgundy and the small intestines will be yellow. And you'll be able to see the different organs because they'll color it in such a way so that you can recognize them. When you look inside, it doesn't look like that. Everything's kind of mushy brownie pink and all mushed together.
Mushy brownie pink.
Yeah, it looks the same, and you can't necessarily tell what's what. So, unless you know what you're looking for. So, in order to see what they're doing, they have to blow you up with gas. So, yeah, that's what they do. So instead of having everything mushed together, you have a dome so you can see what you're doing, and then they have a light that they turn on that's inside your abdomen when they're looking around. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to avoid having a large incision. So, you know, when you have laparoscopic surgery, you're talking about a little tiny incision over your abdomen and another little tiny incision, one other spot. Now, what kind of incisions do you have?
I have big incisions from when I had hernia surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got cut every time.
They had to, right, because you had emergency surgery. They couldn't do laparoscopy.
Well, the emergency surgery was the last one, but the one before that was not. It was my friend Herb saying, you know what?
It's
the way you are and how hard you are on your body, I'm going to go inside there and do this thing without doing the mystery mesh. You know, I mean, he put mesh in, but he just wanted to make sure it was really secure because he knew I would be pushing myself hard.
But you had a situation that was in 2019 where you had that strangulated hernia.
Yeah, that was a different story.
And they had to dive in there and take care of the problem. And so there was no time to do laparoscopy.
They had to cut for that, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was exciting.
It was not.
I will not forget. And I was in Florida. It wasn't good. I was like, should I come home? And he kept telling me not to come home. And so I didn't come home, and it made me crazy.
Yeah, but I was, you know, I was in good hands. I was okay.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you don't, like, get sick enough to go into the hospital again?
I'm trying really hard.
Okay.
I am trying my hardest.
So, gallbladder. So, all right. So, let's say you're in a place where you have gallstones, you have gallbladder pain, and your doc's not ready to send you for a cholecystectomy. Is there some stuff you can do? Yes, there is. So when you get regular physical exercise, you can help prevent gallstones from forming. So that's the other thing that can prevent gallstones from forming is getting regular exercise. So one of the things I have noticed, because I had some health issues, and I'm starting to say things like, I had some health issues. Did you hear me say that?
I heard that.
That's very cool.
That means you might be like coming out of this thing,
coming
right?
out of this thing.
I mean, you
yes.
seem to be getting better.
Well, the last few times I have gone on long bike rides, the long bike rides have made me feel better. So that's very exciting. And one of the things we're talking about is that exercise can help with gallbladder pain. Well, why would that be? Or it can help with gallbladder pain and can also help to prevent gallstones from forming in the first place. Well, what kind of sense does that make? Well, and so what I explained, I was explaining this to Donna yesterday, that when I go on a long bike ride, when you do cardio, you know, a decent dose of cardio, and I'm talking about at least half an hour of cardio, or either you're doing high intensity intervals or you're doing a long, slow kind of thing or a long, medium kind of thing, which is what I did yesterday, where you're exerting yourself over a period of time. So the kind of riding I did yesterday where I rode 48 miles and pushed myself, I wouldn't do that any more than once a week personally. I mean, if you're training for a grand tour, of course you going to train differently. But for me, a regular person who's a cycling enthusiast, who's running a business, it's not good for me to ride long more than one day a week. On the other hand, I think it is good for me to ride long one day a week. And by long, I mean at least 25 to 30 miles. And I'm trained to do that. That doesn't mean you need to be doing that. But long for you is going to be whatever long works out to be for you. So when you're working out, you're going to do it in a way that absolutely works for you. And that doesn't mean that it has to be, 3-4 hours. 1 hour is great for a long workout if what you usually do is 20 to 30 minutes of cardio. So, but anyway, if you push your, when you're doing cardio exercise, what you're doing is your body is circulating your blood through all of your tissues and organs rapidly over and over because you're raising your heart rate regularly. And so your muscles are being used and you're running blood through your kidneys, your liver, your gallbladder, your biliary system. Everything gets a reset. It's really, so it can be really good for you. Of course, if you're in a place where you have excessive inflammation, it may not be good for you. If you're in a place where you do cardio exercise and then you have to recover for 3 days because you feel achy and sore and your organs don't work right, your inflammatory level is probably too high to be able to sustain that, which is what happened to me back in the winter. That was what was going on with me in December, January, maybe into February. And it took a while for the inflammation seems to have gradually calmed down to the point where now it seems like a dose of heavy exercise actually helps to draw that excess inflammation out. And if your inflammation level isn't too high, that's the point that you get. And the other thing I do is I alternate that heavy exercise with very mellow exercise where I'm doing my yin yoga, where I'm holding my yoga poses. So I'm not just cycling anymore. I'm making sure to do regular yoga. And regular yoga really helps to bring me into alignment. It helps me to breathe and it helps me to move my body without stress. Whereas climbing an 18% grade is stressful.
No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was on Pleasant Valley Road. Go figure. Pleasant Valley Road in Clinton.
The valley wasn't so pleasant.
Oh, man. Well, that wasn't a valley. I guess there was a valley, but you had to climb out of it. Who knows? I think that was on Pleasant Valley Road. I mean, it wasn't long after we passed the sign for the one direction was Long Hill Road. The other direction was Pleasant Valley Road. And we went Pleasant Valley. It was pretty funny. So we have some nice signs. Which way do you want to go? The Pleasant Valley, you want to go the Long Hill. Anyway, last year we did the Long Hill. This year we did the Pleasant Valley and climbed the 18% grade. It was great. So anyway, so when you get regular exercise can help to prevent gallstones because you're sending circulation through your liver and kidneys and gallbladder multiple times. So you're also, when you circulate blood, you're also circulating bile. So it helps your digestive system too. All right. So we talked about diet. If you eat too much starch and sugar and poor quality fat, good fat will help to nourish your biliary system. So if you eat things like olive oil or flaxseed oil, as long as it's not rancid, virgin coconut oil, MCT oil. Those oils are helpful for your gallbladder and for your biliary system. But poor quality fats, that's going to be deep fried stuff. You're going to the shack and you're getting deep fried, you're getting a fish fry, you're getting French fries, and they're frying it in poor quality fat. I mean, we don't go out to eat for that kind of food that much, but like, long bike ride day is burger day And we'll often have, you know, we have local farmers who are making wonderful organic potatoes. So we oven roast fries. And so do you put any oil in the oven roasted fries? Or
The ones I made last night?
Yeah.
No oil.
Right. He didn't even use any oil.
I just put them on a I put them on a grate kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just put them right on the grill, on the gas grill.
You put them on the grill.
Yeah.
They weren't even in the air fryer.
Yeah, and then I take it. I'm actually going to get a new one of these because I'm kind of improvised something. But anyway, yeah. I flip it over and just flip it over and flip and shake them and flip them over and do that about 3 or 4 times until they're done.
I had realized that. I would have drizzled some oil over them when I got them in.
We could have.
I'm going to do that next time.
We could have tried that.
Yeah, because the salt wasn't sticking to it.
Right.
So.
Well, we could have salted and oiled them before I put them on the grill, too.
Yeah, or you don't have to. Do what you did, and I'll just drizzle the oil on when you come in.
Oh,
and then put salt on it, and then the salt will stick to it. So anyway, so we're not deep frying. He didn't even put any oil on when he was cooking the potatoes. They were just roasted. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend not to go to the shack.
We don't go to the shack.
Leafy greens can help. I really think liver-friendly foods can help. So liver-friendly foods are going to be lemons, beets, carrots, dark leafy greens, especially cruciferous vegetables, especially cruciferous vegetables that have that spicy taste, because that spicy taste helps to move bile. So we're talking about arugula and radishes. And, you know, when we go to the farmer's market, we talk to the farmer who's growing our food and we say, give me your spiciest radishes. And they says, all right, take this bunch. Because Brian did that this week. I said, which are the spiciest? And he said, here, take these. So we took those and they're nice and spicy. And they'll go in our salad. I'll probably eat a couple just, you know, raw because they're good. And there's a suggestion for whole grains because they have a lot of fiber. I wouldn't eat as many whole grains as vegetables, but you can do that. Fish and fish oil help to move bile through. Thin polyunsaturated oils tend to lubricate the biliary system and they tend to be helpful. What I have seen in my practice is when people have gallstones, if they eat saturated fat, so some people, dairy fat doesn't work for them. You know, heavy cream doesn't work for them. Any kind of cream doesn't work for them. Butter doesn't work for them.
Mm.
But they are fine with flax oil and olive oil and fish oil. Those things don't hurt them. They don't hurt when they go through. And they can help to solubilize sludge and gallstones. Beans, too. I got a black bean brownie yesterday. It's really good. I want to make the black bean brownies at home.
You need to figure out how to make those.
Yeah, right.
I'll eat them if you make them.
Right. Well, we'll both eat them. Yeah, black bean brownies, by the way, so good. I mean, sounds bizarre. So we're talking about black bean chocolate brownies. And they don't really taste like beans. They taste like, you know, They taste like
brownies.
They taste like brownies, but they're...
But moist.
Very moist, yes. And they have a lot of fiber in them.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep you regular. And so you're talking... If you're using black beans and you're using chocolate, you're going to get a lot of flavonoids from those. So you're going to have great antioxidant brownies. And if you want to up the antioxidant content, you could throw things like goji berries or cranberries or other high antioxidant fruit into them. And then you can have blueberry brownies, for example, or cranberry brownies. Or you could just have brownies and then put the fruit on it later. Okay. You can do a heated compress. And a heated compress over your gallbladder can help to relieve the pain. And the heat can help to reduce spasms and relieve pressure from the buildup of bile. And, you know, make sure it's not so hot that it burns your skin. You can warm a wet towel. Put a warm wet towel just right on the area. And at the same time, you can also consider doing castor oil packs. And when you do castor oil packs, you're going to take castor oil with a flannel and warm it up. And you can put that directly on over your liver and gallbladder. And supposedly some of that castor oil is going to get into you and it helps to move things around, helps to move bile. If you're going to do castor oil, putting heat, you can do heat whenever you want to. But with castor oil, I'd like to tell people not to do that every single day because the castor oil is going to help to move things and you want your body to catch up and be able to process the toxins that you're moving through. Peppermint tea. The nice thing about peppermint, we talk about peppermint tea as something we use for irritable irritable bowel syndrome. Peppermint in general is calming to the digestive system, and it's calming to the biliary system too. So if you can drink the tea and it gets into your system, it can calm your whole digestive system down. It can calm your kidneys. Not your kidneys. It can calm your small intestine, your large intestine, and it can also calm your biliary system. You just have to be careful. Some people, when they drink too much peppermint tea, because it is relaxing to smooth muscle, when it goes in, it will relax your lower esophageal sphincter, and it can give you heartburn. So some people are susceptible to that. Then there's raw apple cider vinegar that has anti-inflammatory properties. You can take a couple of tablespoons of apple cider vinegar in warm water, and it might help in the moment to relieve pain. It's not a good idea to drink it straight because it can damage your teeth. And I always recommend, if you're going to take apple cider vinegar, it's a really good idea to drink plain water right afterwards. And as you're drinking, swish the water in your mouth before you swallow. You can even swish it and spit if you want to. But and then do have a glass of plain water, or, you know, just enough plain water to rinse out any residual apple cider vinegar that could be in your mouth, because acidic foods will eat away at your enamel. All right. And then there's turmeric. Turmeric, you have to be careful, because turmeric is a cholagogue and a choleretic. It does stimulate. So you have to see how this works for you, because it will stimulate the gallbladder to make to release bile and help it empty itself. If you do too much, it might hurt. So you want to be careful of that. If you can have turmeric as a tea, and you can do it as tea, because turmeric isn't well absorbed, but you want it in your digestive system. That's where you want it to be. So you don't necessarily want it to be absorbed. You want it to be moving its way through your digestive system. So it's going to come out of the actual digestive tract and into the biliary tract, and it's going to help you make more bile and move more bile. What I'm reading here says the gallbladder produces bile, but gallbladder does not produce bile. Gallbladder is a storehouse. The liver produces bile. And the gallbladder is a holding, it's storage facility. So, but, you know, turmeric will cause the gallbladder to contract and release bile. Then there's magnesium. If you have enough magnesium on board, magnesium is great for spasms altogether. It is also good for digestive spasms. So if you have, I have people take magnesium who are constipated, and the way it works for constipation works a number of ways. One of the ways that it works is because if you take a lot of magnesium, it will draw water to it, and it will make the stool easier to pass. And the other thing is, when you saturate tissues with magnesium, they're a lot calmer, and when they're contracting, they will contract with more regular contractions and be less likely to get spastic. So that's true of any smooth muscle tissue. That's your heart, that's your gallbladder, that's your digestive system, that's your skeletal muscles. Magnesium is just lovely. It's a really important mineral. I think of it as the peacemaker mineral, and in homeopathy, we think of it as the peacemaker remedy. People who are constitutionally of the magnesium, the archetypally magnesium homeopathically, tend to be peacemakers in life. So it's kind of interesting. So I've given magnesium homeopathically to people who I find to be that their gig is they are peacemakers. And people who need magnesium as their homeopathic, they're not very tolerant to discord. And so magnesium, the mineral, is not very tolerant to discord, and it helps to ease discord. And I will say that in the world too, when people don't eat their veggies and they're mostly eating, say, meat and starch and sugar and just poor quality food, they don't get enough magnesium on board. When you have people who are magnesium insufficient, I believe you get violent people. So people who don't eat their veggies are going to be more agitated. They're going to be more anxious. They're going to be more depressed, and they're not going to be as happy. Magnesium is really, really important.
And we were having this conversation with our friend Brian, who was talking about the quality of soils getting to be less and less.
Yeah.
With less and less magnesium in the soils.
Right.
And
right.
That he thinks that has a lot to do with the violence uptake.
Yeah. Uptick, yeah. Yes.
Uptick, sorry, right. Uptick.
Yeah. So that's, those are some natural things to do for your gallbladder. All right, so let's go back here. And then there are some things you can do to try to get rid of gallstones short of surgery. Now, as I said, you may get to a point where your gallbladder is so fragile or it's so inflamed that there's just no other way. And that's okay. If you and your doctor have decided this together, that it's really time to have that gallbladder out, it's okay. And then you'll live without a gallbladder. And there are ways to live without a gallbladder. It's going to mean that trips to Wendy's are probably not going to happen. I mean, you can go, but you're going to hurt. Because what I hear from my patients who don't have gallbladders is they really can't eat fast food. They can't eat deep fried food. They can't eat a lot of saturated fat. And, you know, if they eat dairy, it has to be non-fat. They don't do great with dairy fat. Don't do great with pizza. It's unfortunate, but, you know, that's the way it goes. So you can do cleanses for gallbladder. There are ways that gallbladders, the ways that you get gallstones, and it may be that you you secrete more bile than you dissolve. Your body may make too much bilirubin. So that's when people get bilirubin stones, and that's a genetic thing. That's not from lifestyle. And some people make too much bilirubin, and you can't dissolve it, and you'll get gallstones. So you get pigmented gallstones, and those are not the cholesterol, calcium bile salt gallstones. Those are pigmented stones, and those are genetic. And you know, you might just have a sluggish gallbladder. So some people say that you can help to break up gallstones with a flush, but it's not quite scientifically proven. So people do this thing where they do olive oil juice and herbs for a few days, and they don't do anything but that mixture. Which can be hard if you already have diabetes. So that olive oil does have an effect on bile consumption. It doesn't affect the gallstones. So if you do a gallbladder cleanse, it might not work, unfortunately. Hmm. There are some who use apple juice, and it's because they think that apple juice can soften the gallstones and help to pass them. And there was an anecdote of a woman doing that, but it's not scientifically backed up. So far, the things that we think clean your gallbladder out don't. Then there's apple cider vinegar. Apple cider vinegar, it has some positive effects on blood sugar, but that's not proven either. And then there's yoga. Yay, yoga. Yoga was found to improve lipid profile in people with diabetes. And I think there's a number of ways that might happen. In other studies, researchers looked at people with cholesterol gallstones and found that people with those gallstones were more likely to have abnormal lipid profiles. And there's not a lot of scientific evidence to prove that yoga can help with the symptoms related to gallstones. But here's the thing. When you do yoga, so if you do yoga poses that help your liver, so the kinds of poses you're going to be doing are going to be poses where there's pressure on the lower abdomen against the legs somehow. And so you might do that by doing spinal twists. So when you're doing a spinal twist, you're going to exert pressure on that area of your body. If you're doing a wind relieving pose where you're holding your knee up against your abdomen, you're going to exert pressure on the liver that way. Even if you do child's pose where you're leaning forward and you're pressing your abdomen against your legs that way, you're going to get some pressure against that gallbladder. Any kind of spinal twist, any kind of a twist where you bring the legs across your body, as you're twisting, what's happening is, again, you're exerting pressure on that lower abdomen. And when you press against it, you're getting circulation to leave the area. And then when you release, you get a flush of circulation in. And so that can be very healing. So that's probably what's going on. How Because yoga does a number of things to help to move, like, because it's just regular exercise. If you're doing vinyasa flows, you are actually getting exercise. So you're just moving circulation through you, like if you were doing cardio exercise. But when you do certain poses and hold them, then you are changing the circulation to those areas, especially when you're doing spinal twists or any kind of pose where you're pressing against that right upper abdomen. Then there's milk thistle, liver and gall. Like if you're taking milk thistle ongoing, it can help to prevent gallstones. It is thought to stimulate the liver and gallbladder. You have to be careful. All these things that stimulate bile flow. If you already have gallstones, you have to be careful when you take them because they stimulate, that they push production of bile. And if gallstones stuck in your gallbladder and you are taking something that's pushing flow, you may get too much flow into the gallbladder and you actually get more pain. So you have to be careful of things like milk thistle and artichoke and turmeric. My approach is usually, like, if somebody has gallstones and they're not at the point where they're going to have their gallbladder out, then I will have them do things more to soften the gallstones rather than push the bile through. And so that's going to be your essential fatty acids, possibly your ox bile, and amino acids like taurine. Taurine actually softens. It's a bile thinner. So I'm taking taurine every day right now. But taurine is a lovely amino acid. So taurine is not an essential amino acid, which means that your body does produce some taurine. Taurine, I don't know if they originally discovered it in bulls, and that's why it's called taurine, because it's spelled T-A-U-R-I-N-E. Like, but anyway, it's a very nice, it's a very nice amino acid. It's calming, and, you know, it helps to stabilize. It's a membrane stabilizer, so it helps to stabilize your nerves. You can take it for anxiety. You can take it for sleep. You can take it to calm muscles, and it does happen to thin bile. You can also take it for high blood pressure. So it's a really cool amino acid to have on board. It does a lot of different things. Here's the next thing on the list, artichoke. Artichoke, once again. So milk thistle has silymarin in it, and artichoke has cynarin. This is globe artichoke, not Jerusalem artichoke. Globe artichoke has cynarin in it, and because it's Cynarus scolymus. That's the botanical name of the globe artichoke. And similarly to silymarin, it stimulates bile flow, and you have to be careful of it. If you're preventing gallstones, that's one thing, but if you're trying to get rid of them, you have to be real careful with it. Artichoke is so delicious. We should have artichoke. I haven't seen any artichokes.
Yeah.
You're not a big fan.
They're just a lot of work for very little satisfaction.
No.
That's how I feel about them.
I like dipping them in the oil. It's good.
Yeah.
Then there's gold coin grass. That's another thing. It's linked to reduce gallstone formation. I'm assuming that gold coin grass has berberines in it, and that's why it's called gold coin grass. I have to look that up, though. I already talked about castor oil packs. Acupuncture can be helpful for gallbladder because the Chinese medicine addresses the meridians, and so it addresses lines of energy in your body that are associated with the liver and gallbladder. So if you put those back into alignment, you may have better gallbladder function. So you might be given bile salt, bile acids like ursodeoxycholic acid or chenodeoxycholic acid. It was given to people who were obese, who were on a very low calorie diet, because you can form gallstones if you lose weight too fast, because you're releasing fat, and the fat is coming out of storage and it's going into your biliary system, and if too much goes through, that can contribute to the production of gallstones. So you have to be careful. So, you know, the final thing that you do for gallstones is take it out. You remove the gallbladder so you can't have gallstones anymore. Although, you know, we say that you're going to, you know, you're going to be able to not form stones anymore if you take the gallbladder out, but you can get biliary stones in other parts of the biliary tree. You get biliary sludge. That can happen. I have people who have ongoing fatty liver issues and they have abdominal pain. So you'll see gallstones in women, more often in women. I'm assuming there's something to do with estrogen, because, you know, the 4S, female weight, you know, being overweight, fertile and 40-ish. Those are the 4 Fs of gallstones. Also, if you have diabetes and if you're pregnant and if you take hormonal medications and if you eat too much fat, you're more likely to get gallstones. So I think that eating a ketogenic diet, there's a risk of gallstones. It depends on your makeup. Not everybody will get gallstones because gallstones are unusual. Most people don't get them. But if you're on a ketogenic diet, that is a risk because you're eating a lot of fat, especially saturated fat. And it's thought that some foods for some people will aggravate the gallbladder. If you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, you tend to have a lot less risk for having gallbladder removal surgery. And so that's actually been studies. If you eat a variety of produce, and so it's the fiber thing. It's the fiber thing. And it's also that you're regularly consuming foods that stimulate bile flow. So if you're regularly eating radishes, you're regularly eating, cruciferous vegetables. If you're regularly having, water with lemon in it, lemon, see, you're going to have more regular flow of bile. And so things are going to tend not to get stuck. If you eat too much eggs, anything with a lot of saturated fat in it. So eggs can be an issue. Too much refined sugar is a huge issue. Foods with lots of saturated fat. So if you have a serious nearly daily pizza habit, that could be an issue. And if you're eating food intolerances, that can be an issue. So managing your weight is a good idea. But if you're going to try to lose weight, please don't lose it quickly. If you go on diets where you're losing 10 pounds in a couple of weeks, that's a good way to get gallstones. Okay. Just because you're releasing the fat is releasing too much fat too fast into the biliary system and it can get backed up and get stuck in that gallbladder along with, you know, calcium and cholesterol, right? And bile salts. So losing something like 1 to 2 pounds a week is a really good thing. And I know that sounds like that would make you impatient, and it might, but think about it. If you lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, how much weight will you have lost by Christmas? A bunch, right? So so if you're trying to do fat loss, slow and steady is the way to go. So natural treatment of gallstones can be difficult. The research isn't great, but there are some things that I have seen that can be helpful. And if somebody's gallstones are really big and they're in a lot of pain, then I just encourage them to go have it out because, you know, it becomes a quality of life issue. So, all right. So now we want to talk about, I don't think we're going to get to talking all about how to help fatty liver. So let's talk about foods that help your liver, that are good for liver health, and talk about why. So things that are good for liver health. So first of all, would you believe that coffee is really good for liver health? Now, the caveat there is that if you're putting a ton of saturated fat in your coffee, that may not be as good for liver health. People on ketogenic diets tend to put a lot of fat in their coffee, and they will put, you know, they'll put butter or they'll put, now MCT oil, I don't think stimulates the production of gallstones because MCT oil is not absorbed in the same way that saturated fat is. Saturated fat is going to go through your whole digestive system and it's going to be absorbed in the small intestine, where MCT oil is absorbed right away in your stomach and is used for energy. It tends to help to keep your weight lower. So if you're putting MCT oil and that's the only oil you're putting in your coffee, you're okay, I think. But if you're using heavy saturated fat in your coffee, it's not going to be as good for your liver health. But plain black coffee with nothing in it, or with non-caloric sweeteners or flavorings in it, or, you know, a functional coffee that has maybe mushrooms in it or other herbs, those can be helpful for your liver health. Drinking coffee can help to protect your liver from disease, and even with people who already have problems with their liver. And it can help lower the risk of cirrhosis. So if you have, if you're a problem drinker, it might be a good idea to drink coffee. And again, the purer the coffee, the better. And also, it's a good idea to drink organic coffee so you're not dealing with pesticides and hormones. And there's a lower risk of death in people with chronic liver disease. So it tends to help because coffee, again, it stimulates the flow of bile through your biliary system. So things tend not to get stuck and toxins tend not to get stuck. And you know how you drink your coffee and then you have to run for the bathroom? Like some people use their coffee and it helps them to have a bowel movement. Well, it causes biliary flow, which is going to cause a reaction the whole way down. And then you're going to be able to go to the bathroom more readily. If you're drinking good organic coffee, it can be anti-inflammatory. It increases the amount of glutathione in your body, which is a big detoxifying enzyme. It's a great antioxidant, so it helps with this antioxidant system. And so you can drink coffee and it can help your liver. Now, if you are a person who doesn't metabolize the caffeine very quickly, like me, you have to be careful how much you drink. Because coffee can aggravate arrhythmias or even give you arrhythmias if you're susceptible. If you don't, the problem is, you know, if you are a fast metabolizer of caffeine or you drink so much coffee that you've upregulated your CYP1A2, the enzyme that breaks down caffeine, to the point where you can drink coffee and then go to sleep, then your coffee's good for you. I am not that way. I had too much caffeine yesterday. I had a lot of trouble falling asleep last night. Done a very long bike ride, but I had 12 ounces of coffee yesterday. And it probably wasn't even 12 ounces because it had ice in it. So it was probably more like 10. That's how many ounces of coffee I had yesterday.
And when you came home last night,
I was like, abla, abla, abla.
I said, so how much coffee did you have today?
And I told you to shut up. Yes, and then there's tea. What I mean by tea is the plant Camellia sinensis. So that is the plant that makes green, black, and white tea. So because in this country, we don't have different words for Camellia sinensis versus herb tea. In French, we do. They do. They have the word thé, which is that specific plant. And then they have tisane, which is a hot beverage made with any other herb. All right. So when I say tea, I'm talking about Camellia sinensis, black, green, white tea. And there was a study in Japan that found that drinking 10 cups of green tea a day was associated with good markers for liver health. I'm not drinking 10 cups of green tea a day. For my patients in general, if they want to use green tea, like if they need green tea for their liver health or they need it to protect them or treat cancer, I'm going to be telling them to take pills and often decaffeinated pills. Tea is useful for people who have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. If you drink tea that's high in antioxidants for 12 weeks, it improves your liver enzyme levels and your oxidative stress. And people who drink green tea are less likely to develop liver cancer. There's a study in mice that found that black tea extract reversed the negative effects of a high-fat diet. I often feel like when I have a little bit of tea after a meal, it helps me process my meal better. So then there's grapefruit. It has lots of antioxidants in it. It has it has antioxidants called naringenin and naringin, and those can help to protect you from liver injury. It helps to reduce inflammation, protect your cells, and those antioxidants can help to protect against hepatic fibrosis. So again, grapefruit is something, you know, how Jimmy Buffett has that song, grapefruit juice, you know, so he's talking about that as a hangover remedy. Well, guess what? It's a good idea. If you've had a bender, having grapefruit the next day is actually good for your liver. So Jimmy Buffett was talking about a real liver healer. Juicy fruit gum, that just, you know, gets rid of the cotton mouth and the stank, but because it's just gut flavored gum. But actual grapefruit can actually be helpful. I find grapefruit very refreshing. It's one of my favorite fruits. I love to eat it. I love grapefruit flavored things. and grapefruit flavored, you know, it's hard to find, but grapefruit flavored sorbet, grapefruit candy, and actual just plain old grapefruit is really delicious. And fresh grapefruit juice is really good. So nice antioxidants there. Blueberries and cranberries. I've still got a few blueberries left. They both have anthocyanins, which are very good for your liver. The great antioxidants help to protect you from liver damage. And they do help slow the development of lesions and fibrosis. So we have blueberries in the freezer now, and blueberry season is just, I mean, you're still going to be getting blueberries from Maine and north. So we'll still be getting them. But you know, we're going to be getting less and less of them. And soon the blueberries will be coming from Chile. Chile has an amazing, amazing fruit industry. And grapes also, that we're getting into grape season. The Tomcord grapes are ready, which are very exciting. They have resveratrol, and resveratrol itself is great for liver inflammation, reducing inflammation. And grape seed extract can also help improve liver function, to help with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Whole grapes. Whole grapes also, you might want to take grape seed extract, but also consider eating actual grapes. Then there's prickly pear, which is has beautiful antioxidants in it, and people who consumed prickly pear were helped. It can help a hangover, so that's interesting. I mean, of course, we don't have prickly pear around here. You're going to see prickly pear and prickly pear products more likely out west where they grow. And I had an actual prickly pear. You have to be very careful when you eat them because they have tiny little spines that can get caught in your lips, and they're hard to pull out. But they're such a beautiful color. And if you can get, some prickly pear products here sometimes. There's a company that sells cactus juice that has prickly pear in it. Then beet juice. Beet juice is also something that can help with your liver. It helps to, the betalains help with your, they're great antioxidants. They help with heart issues. And they also help to increase nitric oxide and help your liver to function better. Then we talked about cruciferous vegetables. Cruciferous vegetables, the spices in them and the I3C that's in them are really helpful for your liver health and help to prevent you from forming fatty liver disease. Nuts and seeds can be helpful too. And there was a study that showed that people who ate nuts and seeds have less likelihood of having non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, as well as those who ate fatty fish. We talked about olive oil. I think I may pick up next week and talk about fatty fish and olive oil, and then the rest of the things that can help with your non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, because it is time to go. All right. So the liver is a really good thing to talk about ongoing. So we have great help for your gallbladder and for your liver, which are really common problems. So be kind to them. Labor Day weekend is coming up. Don't enjoy a beverage if you wish to, but don't drink too much. And if you do drink, consider having some grapefruit afterwards, and do drink lots of water. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.